I want to say that this thought of that there are beings who have a relation to humanity has been stressed in many different ways. I was, of course, brought up, as I think I've said many times, not in the United States. I was born in Java, the Dutch East Indies. And I've been in many countries in the area, in the East, Southeast Asia. And I always have to stress this, because I think it's not common, that the first religious sound I heard was the singing of the Quran. That at least is different from most people's experiences, because Java, where I was born, is an Islamic country. But also there, from however young I was, the idea, Islam doesn't have so much of this idea, but Hinduism pervades that country, and I've been born a theosophist beside. Everywhere, the thought that there were beings in other, outside of the human ken, I experienced, because in so many places where there were huge trees, they had little shrines where they brought offerings to the trees as a symbol to nature. And I therefore would also recommend, while I think of it, two books. One of them, of course, is The Kingdom of the Gods by Geoffrey Hodson. But we have a very interesting book which we, the Quest just has published, called I Sent a Voice by Mrs. Evelyn Eaton. I think what I'm stressing, the latter even, it deals with American Indian healing and American Indian culture. But it gives one the sense of the American Indian's feeling towards nature. We are very happy. I'm very happy to be able to tell you that Mrs. Eaton, by the way, will be with us on May 19th for a seminar on American Indian rituals and healing. Now, to come back to my subject, these beings, which we call the Devas, from our point of view, are part of nature. They are the beings which are part of the whole cycle of life, death, form. They are an order of beings. And when I'm going to talk about this, I'm going to be able to say very little on a vast subject. Because from the theosophical point of view, angels are not necessarily only related to a religion. Angels are part of the laws of nature. They are forces which are around us in nature in many ways which we experience, whether we are aware of it or not. And first of all, I think today, going to relate, as there are so many different categories of these beings, those beings which have to do with nature. And in some ways, we are very much more closely related to that aspect than we are aware of. Even in our theosophical teachings, they are related to the four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. From the theosophical point of view again, these elements have to do with the great forces in nature. And these angels, and when we talk about angels or devas, they really are conscious at different levels. I haven't talked on this subject for what, 20 years or something. But I gave a talk in New York City along this line, what, I think 10 days ago. I just escaped the snowstorm there. But I think of New York City, I lived there so many years. And I want to give this an example. Instead of Chicago, I can say anything good or bad about New York City, and I don't want to say this about Chicago. And also, New York City is a queer place. It is finally an area, a very small place. It has an enormous population, and it is the sea and the river are there. And I want to use it again as I did in my talk in New York City. New York City, beside this, has a population of about 8 million people. And I think it's a good example. When you've got 8 million people congregated in a small place, you can imagine, and I don't think anybody could disagree with me, there's a great deal of violence, isn't there, in the human emotions. There is violence, there are all sorts of, you might say, negative emotions erupting. And we also, I think even worse than Chicago, I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying it makes it difficult because people are so close. So many ethnic backgrounds are there. And also, of course, it's very creative, it has a powerful influence, I mean, worldwide. And now I'm going to talk to you about the angel. I mean, whether I talk about the angel of New York in one of the most difficult and most violent cities, in one way, you can see why I picked New York and not Chicago. In the country, I'm going to give this as an example of what I mean about these angelic presences. There, this is an example. You think it's bad if I hang it my spectacles that way? There, what I mean, it's a small space that it stretches all over the world. There is a being which we can call the Angel of New York, but you must think of such a being, even if I describe one, which stretches all over the United States. This is an angelic consciousness. What it is, if you can imagine, that's New York City, that there is a conscious being. His consciousness, and I want to stress the word consciousness in this, permeates that area, which we can call the city of New York. His consciousness, in other words, is in a certain area. His aura, because another way of it, encompasses that. Therefore, it includes all the good feelings of love, all the feelings of violence which are in that area. It takes place within this being's consciousness. Have I made this point clear? And therefore, there is a relationship. Now, all angels, the angel of New York is very unique. But so many acres, I'm not going to say what land, I'm just giving you a rough example. They all have this brooding consciousness, as it were, of this earth deva. I mean, we are therefore associated with them in a much more closely than we are aware of. But New York is a very different being. The earth angels, because I'm talking about that first, have very much more to do in most cases with nature, with plants, with growing things. But the angel of New York is a very unique being because he has this consciousness and conscious relation on his part with that human element. Now, what happens. All right. In a place like this, there's first of all his root to the earth. I mean, his consciousness, you can see, is rooted in the earth too. But it really is most effective on the level of the emotions. Say that in a given day, there's a tremendous lot of violence anywhere. If you can imagine that in the consciousness of this angel, he would become aware of a tremendous amount of negative energy in that part where that violence takes place. Now, what his job is, at this unique place in New York, wouldn't, as I say, happen to the same extent except in another big city, would be to keep in balance constantly the positive and negative energies which we human beings generate in a city like that. I mean, what people generate in violence, that's part of their background, that's part of it. But constantly to keep the balance. And thus, for instance, the Angel of New York has a very powerful effect, really, in a city of this sort. I'm not going to talk about that a great deal longer, but all over the United States, and I think about myself, I've seen most of the United States, I can say that. I've been in every state except Alaska. And as I've driven it, beside flying endless times, I think I have been, for an incredible amount of years, I genuinely have a feeling for the country. And I think I have much more fun than you. Can I say that? Because wherever I go, I think the first thing I do is I try to be in empathy and in harmony with these beings. And I personally feel that there is a tremendous difference in different parts of the country. There is no sameness, not only because of the trees, not only because of the whatever one sees, but I think in these invisible presences, there is a distinctive and different character. And I think if one can become, therefore, have a great deal more empathy, I think. How do you do that? Very few of us, first of all, really look. Do you think we look outside? If you go on a trip, do you stop enough? And I would say, I feel this myself. We have a meditation group every day. And I always like to look at a tree which is right outside the window. I think it gives me at least a focus. And wherever I go, in other words, I do have this sense of that I'm living in a universe which is not only inhabited by all the practical things, but that I'm part of a very dynamic universe which has a great deal more energy, force, than we are aware of. In all my travels in the United States, I think, for instance, the Grand Canyon, and I've been in many parts of the world myself, is one of the most unique places. It has an extraordinary atmosphere. It's magnificently beautiful because the clouds, and all these different colors of sand, it never, from moment to moment, is the same. And it has a definite link with Indian civilization, which I've always been interested in myself again. And all over, wherever I've traveled, and I wish you could do the same, if you could go out, pick on something, if you can't encompass this feeling of empathy with the whole thing, and say to whatever it is to yourself, and have a direct feeling, to a tree, you're beautiful. Last year, I had a seminar, I had a workshop on Orcas Island, one of our camp. And on the last night, most of these people were medical professionals, and they'd never heard of theosophy or any of these ideas. But on our last night, everybody hugged the tree. And I think this is opening ourselves up to the forces of nature. Now, I cannot take too much time on this particular subject. There are also the same beings, and I'm going to describe this maybe in a different way. In the sea, air and fire, but they all have different functions. This is not easy to describe exactly, and it may seem very far-fetched. But if we see life from the point of view of these beings, it doesn't look like we see it. First of all, what do we see? If I see you, I see you, your face, I see you have a red, green, purple, whatever it is, dress, isn't that so? And from that, very often, I may guess or deduce something of what your personality is. But it's the form and what catches my eye, and I suppose also, if I just look around, I would forget it the next moment what you wore. I would observe that. From this other point of view, life looks very different. What we see as form, in other words, would not be the first thing. I mean, it would be vague and indistinct. A tree, you or I, it wouldn't look the same. What they are aware of is the energy level at these different states of consciousness we are. Thus, they would see us more or less as an energy level. They could pick up in 1 second whether we were sick or well. Maybe they wouldn't think about it that way, but they would think of it as disorder. Am I making this clear? And also, whatever you really felt, whatever your emotions, good, I mean, negative, whatever it makes a human being, I'm not making any judgment on that. We are all mixes, aren't we? They would instantly perceive at different levels of energy. So they would know and they would be aware of what we are experiencing at that moment. So there is a direct perception which is at a totally different level. I think also they wouldn't even see the earth like we see it. They aren't interested in grass as grass. That sounds a peculiar thing to say, but I hope I'm giving you an insight in that. They would really perceive it as a network of energies. This is how they would see the earth. And thus, that is a different point of view, isn't it? Then, as their work, I mean, from my point of view, is to always be aware of, you might say, nature's orders, as archetypes, I'm not at all levels. They, and also as they accept life, death, destruction, they never feel about it the way we do. We are wedded to the idea and we look at everything from the point of view of form. Can you realize what it does if you aren't? It means that the life, which is within the consciousness, which I think is the most important part, they perceive. So in as these angels from these four angels of the four elements, they are also part of the world of destruction. There's a great many cataclysms, there's a great many changes in the earth, I mean through the earth's history, finally. It's a tremendous lot of change. They accept and they are part of that cataclysm. But they at all times, and this is the difference between us and them, they can perceive that order in some form, that there is a regeneration, will come from a temporary chaotic condition. And this, therefore, I think when you come into contact with them, I think you feel with these beings that they have, in a different sense, what Aldous Huxley called the perennial view. It's a different way of looking at it. Thus, they have something to say. They've seen cultures go, they've seen the whole gamut, in other words, of birth and death assumes a totally different aspect from their point of view. Now, the angels of the sea, I'm going to just go quickly through that before I come to others. You can see it's a vast subject, isn't it? And I can only tell you that much. Angels of the sea, I think the sea, the consciousness of these beings, stretches much further, in other words, than on the land. And they are much more removed, of course, from human beings because they have the sense of balance of nature. I mean, the sea is part of nature. And the same thing, you probably have never seen volcanoes or fires. I've seen volcanoes because, as I said, I was raised in the Dutch East Indies, and we did have volcanoes. I was surrounded by a chain of volcanoes when I was a little girl. And the same thing, each element has a different contribution to make. And the air, I think, that consciousness, in some ways, is, of course, not rooted in the earth. And I think these beings, in other words, their level of consciousness begins at the emotional and reaches much higher. Am I making this clear, too? Now, I've given you this thought. Now, I want to say this, but then I'm going to come to another subject with regard to angels. Why am I talking about this? Most of you cannot perceive them. Most of you are not sensitive to this. But I personally believe that we human beings, whether we are aware of it or not, play an important part in this whole picture. They live, they exist, they have their being at a different level. And to affect what happens on the earth, they have to affect our minds and emotions. Otherwise, there wouldn't be action. And thus, on this tremendous feeling, which is all around, which people have of conservation, of ecology, I think there is an awakening in the United States and all over the world on this subject. And I think these beings are, for instance, tremendously concerned about this. If you are working towards this, if you open yourself up to this, you are not only the agents of these beings, I think you would get a great many more creative ideas. They are dealing a great deal with creativity and this. And I believe that we human beings, if we could perceive and think of them, would try to obey the laws of nature very much more, and we would be much happier. Now, about, are you cold? I'm perfectly warm. Okay. If you are happy, I am. But I don't want you to be. Are you uncomfortable, Dr. Rai? Would you like to have it closed? All right. About the other kind of angels, the whole angelic kingdom, and we in the scriptures of all nations, there are beings, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about how they look and not look. From my point of view, as always, they are the guardians of the balance of nature. I've talked to you something about the angel of New York and what he does about balancing. In religion, in art, whenever people go to church in any country in the world, there are these beings, and what do? They use our religious feeling, our religious worship, in other words, and use it as a reservoir of goodwill towards the world. That's what it is, doesn't it? So they're always using what the beautiful feelings we feel in church and in all religious feelings. I think it opens all of us up to a more spiritual view of the world. And all this rises up to whoever you are praying to. But the essence of this, I think, helps not only the individual, but it is constantly, in other words, helping this the whole rest of the world. And they are, as it were, the guardians, the messengers of using this positive religious feeling. And I think this is true, of course, of all religions. And I'm going to talk very little about this, because maybe this is one of my primary interests. But nevertheless, this is not what I'm talking about today. The same thing, I think, happens with regard to healing. There are these beings. I have, of course, watched a great many of these religious revivals, even in many different countries. I personally believe, and I'm going to relate this again. I said, when these beings, there are different orders, look at us, they can see the disorders in disease. That's one of the first things I said. With prayers, with thinking about the healing forces, through human beings, through prayers, they are able, I mean, I'm going to pick on Catherine Kuhlman, because I think she, of all the people I have seen, she has done the most remarkable healing work. People have been healed instantaneously, and the Lord is the same way. What these beings, and through the prayers, I do not have the time to talk about this, what they are able to do is to send this sense of order. I always talk about it as a universal orderly force Because what it does is to speed up through a healer or however it's done, the drawing towards order, which is in every human being, the physical body, finally compensates. The whole thing is based on trying to compensate, to bring about order, even if there's disease. If there is a healing taking place with this blessing from these angels, what it does is to put enough orderly healing energy in the human body so that the body itself recovers. If there is an instantaneous healing, it picks up what is innate in the person and brings it to wholeness. As I said, there are many, many different ways of doing it, and I've watched them. That's one way angels help us. Now, about the art. I think contact, and whether we are aware of it or not, music. Music, I think, is one of the great and most important parts. I think, personally, that there are beings, some of these beings, who think in terms of music. That's a strange thing to say, but I suppose if human composers can think in terms of music, why can't these beings? It's their music, but they think in harmony. And thus, when people get together, when people go to concerts, when they are trying to listen to music, then they are enjoying music, they are opening themselves up to these creative influences from the angelic world. They may not be aware of it, but just opening yourself up and trying to reach this level of creativity helps to bring this out to you. Wherever there is, in other words, an attempt to listen. I think if we not only listen to the music like a lot of people do, but try to get the sense of a pervading harmony and open ourselves up to that, we can really experience some of this thing. Now, I have only been once. Even if I've lived here for 3.5 years, I'm never here in the summer, practically. So I haven't been to your Ravinia Park. It's not the name. But more than once in all the years I've been to Chicago. I know it's a disgrace, but I'm not here. But up in our eastern camp, we have something called Tanglewood. It's in the Berkshires. And it's a magnificent estate. And just like Ravinia, the trees are magnificent. Everybody by the thousands sits on the ground. They come from everywhere. They have a music shed, just like you have here. And I think when music is played, in other words, there's a tremendous response towards unity. There's a tremendous response from these thousands and thousands of people. And in a place like this, and I'm sure that's true of Ravinia, people get closer to the sense of being part of nature and part of a greater whole. So I think those concerts draw again, whether you are aware of it or not, there is an exchange with these beings. Now we're coming to a much more difficult part, and I'll end up on that. In the theosophical philosophy, we feel, and this comes about life and death, I'm going to be asked this anyway. I think when a person is born, when a person dies, people do get into touch with the angelic human forces, in other words. There is a relationship, and this relationship is also, we hear in the theosophical teaching a great deal about karma, a word cause, law of cause and effect. Theosophical teachings really accept the idea of reincarnation and rebirth, and thus, therefore, I think we theosophists have much more the sense of something, a continuum in consciousness which goes on, in other words, from life to life, and is last beyond death too. Now, in this work, we have, I think, a different point of view. It is, there are lots of tragedies, aren't there? Terrible tragedies in life. People, children, people die in accidents. Terrible things happen. I don't think we say that they are not terrible. But I believe personally that there is this law of justice, whether we can understand it or not, this law of karma. And there, I believe, there is a different order of angels which really deals with this. In other words, it's always a balance, isn't it, from my point of view. And thus the balance, if you look at it from a different point of view, these angelic consciousness are with us. There is a beautiful story I read many years ago. I think it's called The Light Invisible. And I believe it's in our library. It's a story of a child dying in some accident. And it describes an angel meeting the child. And in other words, making the child feel better. And it's one of the most lovely stories I have read. It's out of print. But with this idea of life and death, these angelic beings have a relation to humanity. Therefore, they interact in many, many more ways than we are aware of. It's not a separate world. It's a world we are absolutely not aware of. Personally, I felt all my life, even when I was very little, that if I was disturbed or unhappy, I always wanted to go outside and feel the sense of flow. You always expect, people, I think, expect too much of one another. I think they expect too much comfort, too much understanding, and very often they do not get it, and they're very disappointed. Isn't that true? But I think if one is aware of this reality, I don't think these angelic beings realize whether we are hungry. They do not realize a lot of our sorrows. Am I making it clear? But what they have is an absolute sense of the flow in the universe. And they have this tremendous sense of creation, that life is coming up, because they are part of this creative universe. And I personally always have felt, if I went outside and felt this empathy, I did this really when I was quite little, with something much bigger, like these angels, and looking, I always liked to look around two plants, that I felt much more comfortable than if somebody hugged me. That's a strange thing to say, because I felt a renewal in my own energy, and it renewed not by a temporary hug, but I felt a renewal that I was part of a creative world. Am I making this clear? I think having this absolute conviction, which I have myself, has always meant a great deal to me. And also, let me say again, we miss most of us a lot of fun. You go out in your garden, and I do this here, and I do it everywhere. Don't look for the big trees, although I'm much personally much fonder of trees than flowers. Look as a discipline, if you like, for the little things. If you can train yourself to find the little beautiful things, you are learning of focusing, of attention. That life is all around you. I always feel that one of the most significant experiences in my life, it was raining, and I had a meditation group. And I was sitting on pine needles under a tree, and all of a sudden, everybody had eyes closed beside me, but there was a golden eagle just sitting across a tree from me, and he stayed there for the 20 minutes or whatever time. I couldn't, after all, make everybody stop meditating. And first of all, probably the movement would have made him go away, wouldn't it? So I'm afraid they, when I stopped it, when I closed the meditation, they only saw his feathers, in other words. They didn't see the bird. But it was really a remarkable experience of what you might say a experience of many levels of nature with human beings coming together. And I think this is the way to, first of all, to get together with the angels, to open yourself up to the livingness of things, to look for beauty, and to realize that each person has within themselves the capacity to experience this and also to be an agent. That's an instrument. We can all do something to help. I remember one of my members, one of our members, she was sitting on endless hospital committees. And she told me, when she joined our meditation group, that she started thinking of the angel of New York when she was in these difficult hospital situations. And she said it was remarkable. She felt when she concentrated, in other words, after all, she was trying to help other people, wasn't she? That there was a calmness in the atmosphere and that her ideas were much more readily accepted. Maybe she was also more orderly, I don't know. But she said, now I'm completely convinced, she said, after this, that there are such beings and that they can be useful to the work of helping others. And this is what I want to say. I think all of us, in our gardens, wherever we go, we can be part of the order of nature, and that angels and humanity live side by side, and that they are willing to help us, and we can help them. Thank you. Now I'm going to be welcoming questions. We'll have it informally, yes.
The angels that appear to the biblical figures.
To the what?
To the biblical figures.
Yes.
Are these other types of angels?
No, I think you mean about the because the wings.
Well, not necessarily, but their function. They were more or less messengers rather than from what I'm understanding what you're saying. They were more or less delivering a message rather than returning energy or being a reservoir of energy.
And that's one thing you can scold me about. I forgot to describe one, didn't I?
Yeah, I
maybe forgot a very essential part of my speech. Now let me answer you that. I'm trying to analyze what you are saying. Do you think of the biblical angels as messenger?
The angel Gabriel, yeah. That's how I have thought of them.
What's that? Well, would you... I think that when the angels come and people perceive them all over, they do give a message. I haven't talked about that. But I think many, many people in all cultures have seen them and have given messages. And I think this is part of the order of religious angels.
So these would be another type of angels?
An order, other order. I mean, that would belong to the order of angels, which are part of the religious ceremonies, of the whole of the religious worship. Am I making this clear? Mm-hmm. I tried to bring this out, that there is an order of angels which has to do with religious worship in all nations and in all religions. And I would say that these angels definitely belong to that order. And they do have messages to give to humanity. But after all, these messages are probably seen by very few people, or am I wrong? Yes?
I've read that it is possible to cross over from the Devic line of evolution to the human, and vice versa. In your experience, have you ever met someone that crossed over?
I think it's possible. Yes, I believe that these things are possible.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever met anyone like that?
I don't know. But I firmly believe it is possible, and I think some people are very close to the human. I haven't stressed the religious aspect so much today, because that has been written in a great many books, much more than that. But also the appearance. Now, I think the religious angels and the angels which come into contact with humanity do have a human form. Now, about the wings, personally, I don't think that they have wings in the ordinary way, because, first of all, they are not in the physical world, and wings are not necessary at all. I mean, these beings, if they live in another world, they can go from one. But what happens is, when we think of them, and I think of them, I think of them as having an enormous radiant aura. Am I making this clear? And I think in the symbols of this aura are very much sort of something which might look like wings and be interpreted, because wings give you the feeling of freedom and aspiration, isn't that so? But I think if you saw these tremendous lights, flashing lights all around the heads, they would be to you like wings, wouldn't they? Does that make sense? No, how do you know? I mean, wings, I think to humanity is a symbol, finally, isn't that true? Personally, there is no rationale for wings in any way. That's what I'm saying. But I think I could see that they would be interpreted in that way, very much, because of the flashing lights. And I think if you see them, and also most artists, I think they think often and represent angels as really human beings with wings, isn't that so? More, to give them again that symbolical. I think what the idea of the devas, of light, which I personally is an absolute element in them, is not very often shown in Christian works of art. I think I will say that much, how beautiful they are. I think in other religions, of course, remember, I'm a theosophist, and as I said, and the Quran, I never joined any religion in my life, I've got to say that. As I respect all religions, they are depicted differently, the devas. Am I making this clear? I think the angels are specifically, I think, in our Christian tradition, and I think they give us a tremendous message of hope, of, you know, love, and this sort of thing. And as you say, they bring messages. And I think they have been messengers, and the idea of messengers have been associated with the angelic kingdom in all religions. Any other question? Yes.
Were you taught when you were little about angels, or did you just experience them? And how would you go about talking to a little child about the angelic kingdom?
Well, I think I would, to a little child, I don't think I would necessarily. I have had meditation groups of little children, and I never talked to them about angels so much, but I maybe talked to them about fairies and trees, etc., etc., more. But later on, I think one could give them that concept.
Were you taught, or did you just experience it?
I experienced it. I don't think that I was taught in that way. No, I don't think so. Yes?
The Angel of New York, from what you've said, I'm getting the idea that this is some tremendous force with lines.
It's a consciousness, and it can assume human form.
It's lines of, let's say, electricity or color.
I don't think we can call it electricity.
No. I'm just trying to see what it is that you're seeing.
Of course, there's a consciousness. Don't you think that you can feel a consciousness without
Sure.
But I mean, about the seeing, I think if you think of an angel, I'm going to make it very rough. Don't believe me one word of it too much, because I'm going to give you a picture of everything, and it isn't exactly like what I'm saying. I've got to say that. If they have human form, I think you could see a human form in a tremendous aura, I think it's a very common word now, of shimmering light. Does that give you?
With many colors.
Yes, shimmering.
Okay.
Does that give you a picture
yeah.
or not?
Yeah, it does.
It isn't static. It's constantly changing.
Yeah, changing.
And it is of an enormous extent in that way. And I think what you would see is, and there I come again with the idea of wings, I think probably the shimmering light is much more above the head than anywhere else. And there, I think you get the idea of wings, in other words. And there is, it's no ugly, it's no asymmetrical human being. And I think it does give you the sense of being in a presence. But I think we shouldn't think that all angels like that, because some of these devas are not so highly evolved. In other words, there are many different degrees of consciousness, many different degrees of awareness, even in the angelic kingdom. And I think I make them too solemn too. I think there's a tremendous sense of happiness and joy in them. Am I making this clear? They, after all, don't have our worries to the same extent in any way. And I think there's a tremendous sense of happiness and joy among them. And I think you feel that. And I never spent much time with American Indian, but for Mary, but we did seek, many years ago, we lived near the Pueblo. What I always felt among them is that when they went for a walk or rode their horses, that they were part of nature with their long flowing robes, blankets, etc., etc. And whatever they did, they unconsciously were really part of nature. And I don't think that very many of us are. Do you think so? We have to talk so much. Is that correct or not? Do you disagree with me? And I personally feel, except in groups which are very sympathetic, if you talk so much that you lose the sense of lose the sense of nature. I think you can be only really with a group which is sympathetic or by yourself, but large groups of people, the desire to express themselves, I think is one of the things which stops it. When I was living in New York, I had my grandson with me, and we had the brook in my house. And I don't know how many hours we spent together while he was floating leaves. But we had a huge oak tree, 300 oak tree I had in my yard. And all the children were brought up to say hello to the oak tree. They patted the oak tree from when they were very small. So they gained. You can bring them up at a very early age to respect a living thing and to say hello, to feel something like that. And I think if you are with a child and just let be and get them the sense of this flow of things. Don't you think this is one way, without a lot of sermons, to make them feel that we are part of a world and make them respect everything? In our AUKUS camp, and I had this professional workshop last year, we have something, our rabbits are tame. You wouldn't believe it, but we had a meditation every morning, and we had right in the middle, we had 4 or 5 rabbits meditating with us. as we have never harmed any living thing there, the rabbits, if you want to know the truth, I sat over a bench and felt something nibbling my toes, and it was the rabbits. Thus, I think they were just as astonished with the rabbits as all the teaching they got. One of the doctors, his triumph was this, that he was able to lie down and get the rabbit to sit on his chest. I think that was the greatest triumph he ever experienced. And he was able to feed him a piece of lettuce, the rabbit, or a piece of carrot. I think no other triumph was ever greater in his life than to be able to do that. So I think if you experience that, you feel differently. Don't you think so? Then you become aware of this unity between nature and this other consciousness. So I think you can, if you can teach a doctor, you can teach... Can I say that?
Whenever I fly, I'm on an airplane, I always feel some consciousness on the wing to take me safe. I don't know if that's angelic force or what, but that's my way of...
Well, I think there are these angelic forces, of course, when you go up in the air, and if you feel that, I think that is very helpful, I think. Very helpful, yes.
Could you perhaps share with us how the angelic beings are perceived without getting into too technical sort of explanation? Is it a consciousness sort of thing, or physical eyes?
No, physical eyes, I think, have very little to do. By the way, can you hear me with all this paraphernalia around me? I always forget. I think there are probably two ways. It is by clairvoyant vision or really by sensing them. Don't you think that would be the two ways that you could... I don't think the physical eyes have anything to do with the angelic kingdom. About fairies and all that, maybe the physical eye could have something to do. But with the angels, I don't think you would have... That would have anything that they was. So, how can I put it? In my experience, in my long life and my long experience, I would say that people have these flashes of clairvoyance many times in their life. They cannot consistently do that because that's not easy. But the flashes, I think, thousands of people have this all through their life. And therefore, something opens within them and they do experience this. So I think people do perceive it, and also other people can sense it. I think sensing, this sensitivity can be very often extremely accurate, I think. I really think so, because besides, how can I put it? With these angelic beings, the communication is through people's minds and emotions. I consider messages. I mean, in art and in even what people feel, I think at the level of mental consciousness, in other words, there is an exchange. So sometimes that's very accurate, I think. Any other question? Now, who shall I take? I'll see somebody with a stripe. I'll put my striped dress. What about that? And then I'll come to you, all right? All right, the lady with the striped dress.
would you, an experience that I had, I would like to know if you would consider this one of these things where you were in communication or you were sensitive enough at that particular moment to feel it. I had an experience of being out in the sand dunes, and it was after I had lost someone that I loved very dearly, and of walking in the sand dunes and just being completely alone, and it was at night. And as I walked along the beach, I felt this one ship with the earth and the water and the sky. And as I was walking along, I actually stopped in my path because I know I heard forces of great, great music.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no place for it to come from.
No, I think that sounds like a very true experience. Very true experience. And as I say, music is one of the angelic parts.
And it was very comforting, I remember, because I turned away, and I at that moment, I lost some of my great sorrow because I realized I really hadn't lost anything. It was just so ahead of me to, let's say, be reunited with.
Now the lady in the back. Now let me have that lady first, and then the lady with the red hat.
Are all
positive. Oh, what is it?
Angels are all positive. This is all a positive force. Is there such a thing as a bad angel or evil angel?
No, but I mean, you might think so. As I said, so, no, let me explain to you. Angels accept the destruction in nature. Now, I don't think that's bad because, again, that's one of the big balancing forces. But if you think of it that way, that's your judgment. See what I meant? I said that in the beginning, in the cataclysms. In the tremendous destructive powers of nature, angels take part too, because they're part of this tremendous balancing. But they do not do it for evil. They are instruments for order. This is what I have to point. And even while they are part of a cataclysm, they will try to protect whatever they can protect. In other words, they have to obey whatever is part of that balancing. Now the lady in the blue. Yes.
Can you offer any techniques for lay people such as we to be put in communication with the Devic forces and perhaps beyond the point of clairvoyance? In other words, what techniques should we use in order to see these and feel these entities?
Well, I tried to answer it from this gentleman. And I think, as I said, first of all, as I've, you know, you don't know me very well, but when I talk about the subject of healing, I've always brought out the necessity that the person should lose their ego. Nobody can be an instrument if they're doing it for an unconscious glorification of themselves. That's the first thing, isn't it? I mean, if you can really be open-minded, then I think it is possible. But it's the hardest thing in the world to really be open and only think. The theosophical teachings are early teachings. When the society was founded, H.P. Blavatsky founded the society, and a very beautiful little book is written called The Voice of the Silence. But the words which are constantly used are poor suffering humanity. I mean, that is the phrase which is used of why the society was founded. And I think if you can do that, then it may be possible, but that is a reformation in a person, isn't it, so, or a transformation in a person, which is not very easy. Also, we have to, as I said, if to understand them, all of us, every one of us makes mistakes. There's no doubt about it. Everything we hear, everything we perceive comes through our organism, doesn't it? And thus, I think it always is bound to be not totally objective, because it comes through our mind, through our feelings. I think we can try to be. It's very hard to keep one's self, in other words, and one's own judgments out of it. Isn't that true? Because when we are dealing with nature, with these fast things, with these fast concepts, rather, it is very hard to understand that, because we are conditioned by our human judgment, by our upbringing, by what is right and wrong. Isn't that true? To be able to transcend that is not very easy, if I made that clear. All of us, I think, there's not one of us who would not be in the same category. Yes.
I realize maybe this is a little unkind to do that, but nevertheless, the question does have to be raised. How do you differentiate between an hallucination and the voice from the angel?
That's a different... It's a very good question. If you're talking about myself, I have three psychiatrists who will give me a certificate of sanity. I mean, I think it's a very legitimate question. But I think... it's a very legitimate question, so I think it's one's life, isn't it? What more can one say? If you talk about me, I'm a very practical girl. Well, I tell you, being practical isn't out of the way, because I think, how does it change your life? Don't you think that's a good question? Yes, I'll give the lady in the peach blouse, and then I'll come to the lady in the red blouse. But that must
answer the question. You didn't say.
Well, I don't think that I can. Oh, about that.
You didn't say how it differs from a hallucination differ from actually seeing an entity. What your mind creates and what is actually a reality. You have an answer how you differentiate.
Most hallucinations, from my point of view, either they're very struck in one way, I mean, they have, you know what, I mean, they are conditioned by your condition of mind. I think this is the one thing. And so they are very restricted, I think. Don't you think that would be a good way of putting it? From my experience with mental patients, I would say that. And I think the reality is that it is something which is not only a temporary, it's a background, but it's not a narrowing background. It's a widening background, and it's not always the same. I mean, hallucinations, I think, harp on one thing, and it's all in one core. I think the reality has many facets to it, I think, and one doesn't mind being contradicted at all. Now, I must go. I can't say any more. Anyhow, yes? Well, I think there are lots of guardian forces which help a person. And of course, there is their inner self, isn't that true? Which also, I mean, we all feel in the theosophical point of view that there is a consciousness within ourselves which is finally linked up to the highest, and that is your own guardian angel. Now, I'm going to close this meeting. All right, you then, the last.
Okay, how does theosophy describe what is or who is Lucifer or Satan?
Well, I'm not going to talk about that today, because that would give another lecture.
Can you give me a picture?
Well, I tell you, I think the theosophy describes that as, well, it is complicated metaphysics, if you wish to know. But, I mean, I think there are negative and positive forces in the world. There's always a polarity, and in that way it would... Yeah. But but there is an explanation of it. Well, thank you very much.